Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, I'm Callum Stoneman, and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. Tech Talk is our weekly look at, funnily enough, the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with us, you can drop us an email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk at rnib.org.uk. We always love to hear your contributions. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing about the exciting plans to bring Waymo's autonomous ride-hailing service to the UK. Hubert catches up with RNIB's Products for Life store, and we'll be exploring the shared accessibility feature for iOS 26. The usual co-hosts joining me this week, Hubert Pavelkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Hubert, what's caught your eye this week?
Well, now I've managed to order a new set of Meta glasses because I had problems with the other ones being broken and not being fixed. I've also seen an update. Now, this is US only, so let's not get too excited, but I'm certainly glad to see this, and it will come to the UK in the future like these things tend to. The limit on the video length is increasing from 3 to 5 minutes, which... you know, it's something I'm quite happy to see. That plus also there is kind of certain adjustments being done into how the video and the camera kind of processing is done when you're, for example, running and recording, and obviously your camera might be a bit shaky, so they're working on that as well. So a few little kind of nice adjustments. These firmware updates are coming to most models of the Meta glasses, so both the Oakley versions and the Ray-Bans. So that's quite exciting. I'm hoping that will at some point increase the length of voice messages you can record in WhatsApp. That would be quite nice as a next step.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this on the Ray-Bans, though. Yeah, I don't know if I'm too fussed about the longer recording limit, although I suppose it is nice. But it's the stability thing that I'm looking forward to. Because, kind of similar to what you've got on most smartphones, I think. It's just there's more going on in the software to kind of optimize that video and just sort of get it a bit more in focus, just get it a bit cleaner, because I do quite often record on the move. And I'm not running. I can barely run to the fridge. But, you know, just general walking and sort of moving your head around and trying to kind of look around to pan and get a good view, it could help there, definitely.
I'm still waiting on an update that fixes the fact my glasses keep disconnecting every time I phone someone or they phone me.
Yeah, that is weird.
Yeah.
It's still happening. It's really irritating.
Have you reset them, Natalie?
I kind of daren't because it was quite a lot of effort to get them connected in the first place.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, we actually ended up using my brother's account rather than mine because for some reason it liked that better than mine, and I have absolutely no idea why. I just sort of can't face it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. There is a switch on the inside of the left arm that you could maybe turn them off and leave it for a couple of seconds and then turn it back on. I don't know. A lot of people don't know about that switch, but there is one.
I have no idea what's causing it. But say it used to be I just phoned somebody else and then I did an update and now it's if they phone me as well. So it actually made things worse, not better.
It's so weird because I'm not having that. Although I did have one the other day where it randomly disconnected all my services. And it's always at the worst times as well. I got lost the other day because I think I've said on the show we moved house a couple of months ago. So I'm still sort of getting used to the area. And I got a bit lost. So I went to WhatsApp, call somebody on my glasses. I had them on just in case this happened. Told it to WhatsApp them. It's like, oh, you need to connect your WhatsApp account. Like, oh, really? Now? Didn't affect Be My Eyes, though, so I got around it that way. Don't know why it didn't affect Be My Eyes, because it affected everything else, but there you go. Jackie, anything, any updates from you?
Yeah, this is not a new feature. It's been in Word right under our noses for quite a while now, but I came across it when I was training with a pupil this week, and I was introducing her to Word and the ribbon, the dreaded ribbon. And one of the items in the ribbon is the review tab. And in there is a feature called read aloud. And the pupil and I were, examining this, and she got really, really excited. She thought this was just the best thing because it was different from listening to Eloquence and Jaws. So I thought it'd be good to flag this up for anybody perhaps who doesn't use a screen reader, but who maybe has, a sight problem and would like to rest their eyes. If you press Control, Alt, and Space Bar, that is the shortcut to toggle the read aloud voice on and off. And I believe you can adjust the settings. You can do Alt with left arrow in there and Alt with right arrow to speed up the voice. And I think you can change voices as well. So as I say, it has been in Word for a while, but I'd never played about with it until I was doing some training, and this pupil thought it was the bee's knees. So then we digressed and we went onto the internet because she said, could I use anything like that on the internet? And in Microsoft Edge, there is a read aloud kind of thing. I think it's,
Immersive reader, yeah.
yeah, and it's the same in Google Chrome. There's something similar. If you go into the Chrome settings and you go into more tools in there, there is a read aloud similar as well. And I just think this is really useful for people, as I say, who perhaps they don't have JAWS on all the time. They maybe use Zoom text a bit, or they just want to rest their eyes and listen to their text rather than trying to strain to read it. And this is what these immersive readers do. And I just think it's a really useful one.
Yeah, I'm always so dismissive of these because, I mean, like you, I knew it was there, but well, I've got JAWS anyway, or I've got NVDA. Why would I use that? But yeah, you're right. I do sometimes just get sick of that voice, especially Eloquence. I don't like it at the best of times, but it is kind of for me the JAWS voice. Like JAWS doesn't sound right in another voice, so I do still use Eloquence.
I agree. I'm the same. Yeah. But if you've got a long document, it's really useful. If you want to say you've got a book from Bookshare in Word, for example, and you want to listen to that book, it actually does really, the voice is actually really good, and it's really quite easy to listen to. So it is worth messing around. That shortcut again is Control, Alt, and Space Bar to toggle it on and off.
And those voices as well, those Microsoft voices, particularly in Windows 11, are beautiful. Those natural
Yeah, they
voices that you
are.
can get.
Yeah.
Come on, Microsoft, please make these available system-wide. Because at the minute, they're only available in the kind of Microsoft Read Aloud things and Narrator. You can't get them. If you've got NVDA or JAWS, you can't select them. There are some Microsoft voices you can select, but not these newer ones. Don't really know why that is, but I hope it changes soon. Natalie, anything caught your eye this week?
Well, you've actually just reminded me something there, Jackie, in Microsoft Word. I don't know if anybody else here or listening ever has to read documents with comments in it and can find them hard to navigate. I certainly have. And I have, Googled or searched before for keyboard shortcuts. And surprisingly, I've come up blank. I guess Alt Control M to insert a comment, but there's no shortcuts for sort of navigating back and forward through comments. And I was like, I'm sure I found a way of doing this before, but I couldn't for the life of me remember. And eventually I got there. So if you go to the review tab and turn comments on, I think the shortcut's Alt, then Z, then C, you'll be able to, you're in the comments panel and you can navigate through them. But once it's up, what you can do is escape to come out of the comments window and go to the place in the text where that comment belongs. And if you continue reading it and then go find a new comment and want to go back into the window, I was having to turn it off and on again. It was all getting very faffy. What you can actually just do is press F6 a couple of times, and that will take you to it. I still don't find it the easiest window to use, but at least I don't need to keep turning them off and on again. So yeah, it's escape to get out, but F6 to get back in, if anybody else is interested.
Well, you guys mentioned eloquence earlier, and I thought this was an interesting one this week. Eloquence is coming to Android, or at least coming back to Android, I should say. So, Code Factory, which is the company behind Eloquence, stopped supporting Android, I want to say back in 2015 or 2014, around about 10 years ago, when later versions of Android stopped supporting 32-bit apps, which is what Eloquence is. They only support 64-bit, as do many other system, in fact, pretty much everything nowadays. To get in a non-technical way, it's basically an older architecture which isn't really supported anymore, and that meant that Eloquence went away. But now they've kind of recompiled it as a 64-bit app, which is no small task, and brought it back. Which is good if you like Eloquence. What I'm not sure about though is that this is going to be a subscription model. There's no details on pricing yet and what that subscription's going to look like, whether it's going to be monthly or annually or how much it's going to be. But would you subscribe to a voice? It seems a bit of a strange one.
Yeah, it is. I've read about this, and I'm also on a forum of Android users, and my goodness, the list has really hot up this week with
I bet it has.
comments and people asking the same question. How much is it going to be? Is it going to be a monthly subscription? Is it going to be a yearly subscription, or is there kind of a lifetime subscription? But nobody knows, so there's no point kind of speculating until we hear more. But it is interesting that they've redeveloped it, revamped the whole thing, and they're going to be charging people to actually use it. So I'm not sure whether I would bother. It would depend how much it is. I'm not sure it's that worth it, to be honest.
I mean, buying voices is nothing unusual.
No.
I've bought add-on voices before, but they're just one-time purchases. I don't mind if they wanted to say, hey, it's a even if it was a fair bit, say, it's £100 to buy this new Eloquence app, and then you've got it. Yeah, okay, £100 is a bit much, but at least it's only one off. It's the kind of recurring subscription. I mean, I guess my question would be, what new features are there going to be? Because if I'm paying for a subscription, I kind of want to see something change or something come up.
Yeah, you expect regular updates, don't you, with a subscription?
Yeah.
Because actually, I had a wee shock this week when I looked at a notification I had to do from Microsoft saying that my subscription was auto renewing. And the price had increased from £60 to £85, and I went, "Hang on a minute." But that, to be fair, when I thought about it, I thought when you break that down on a monthly basis, it's sort of an increase from kind of £5 to £7. So yes, it's one off. But if I think about it over the course of the year, which made me feel a bit better, and also, I suppose in this case, they have to account for the fact they have now included AI features. I don't think Copilot's brilliant. I do find it a bit glitchy from an accessibility point of view, but it is, as a tool, capable and can be very good and very useful. So when I calmed down, I realised that actually it wasn't too bad, and maybe fair enough. But like you say, Calum, you want some justification for that. And for me, the AI thing was quite an obvious justification. Microsoft are always updating and trying to improve their products.
Well, it's interesting. Let us know. Like we've said, and we should be clear, we don't know any details yet. We don't know anything about what this is going to look like. Obviously, we'll keep you up to date, but just generally, it's a good topic, I think. Would you subscribe to a screen reader voice? Would you subscribe to Eloquence? If you've got any thoughts on the whole comments on Microsoft Word thing, let us know as well, because I've had the same thing that Jackie and Natalie were talking about. I found them a nightmare, and I feel like there must be an easier way to do this. So yeah, get in touch, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Another busy week, as always. This is Tech Talk. The topic of self-driving cars has come up a few times on the show. It seems to be more of a talking point over the last couple of years, especially. It's always sounded a little bit futuristic, but they are slowly becoming a reality. And a company that has been very much at the forefront of this technology is Waymo. They've had an autonomous ride-hailing service in certain parts of the US for a while, and this is now coming to London next year. Joining me now is Amanda Ventura, Public Affairs Manager at Waymo, to learn more about this. Amanda, great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to chat.
Me too. I'm loving the sound of this. So for those who maybe aren't aware, tell us a bit about Waymo and the sort of work that you've done in this space so far.
Sure. So Waymo, which stands for A New Way Forward in Mobility, is a fully autonomous ride-hailing service. We operate a 24/7 service that's on demand in several cities in the U.S., as you just mentioned. And we're excited to bring these vehicles to London next year. They operate very similar to other ride-hailing types of services, where you would hail a vehicle that's completely empty on an app, and empty vehicle comes, picks you up, takes you where you need to go within the service area. So it's a completely personalized, customized, delightful ride with no one behind the driver's seat.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when you say empty, you mean completely driverless.
Exactly. Yeah. So we have hardware and software that work together to navigate complex city environments, so that you never, as the rider, do any of the driving maneuverability. So you don't need a driver's license. You can fall asleep in one of the back seats or passenger seats. That's kind of the beauty of it. It's a completely autonomous ride. That is what full autonomy actually is.
What has the reaction been like of this? Because I would guess, no, not to answer the question for you, but I would guess there's, whenever we talk about self-driving cars, there's one side which is, oh, amazing, I can't wait, it sounds so cool. And then there's the other side of, absolutely, definitely not, that freaks me out, I'm not going anywhere near it. It seems to be like two extreme sides. So how have people found this in, you know, actually in use?
So the people who ride with Waymo love it. They're so delighted. I mean, the word that I always hear is that this is magical, this is delightful, this is amazing. And then I also hear, this is so like relievingly boring, you know, because they end up just kind of going back to their phone because they just end up feeling so comfortable while riding with us. And now there's little challenges to see like who gets the most, you know, mileage and who's taken the most rides with us. And that's always fun to see kind of near the end of the year. We've done more than 100 million paid rides, and we are doing hundreds of thousands of rides a week. And it is, I mean, the fact that people keep coming back and riding with us, I think, is statement enough. For the people who are still more skeptical, I mean, that's where my job really gets fun and interesting, because at Waymo on the public affairs team, we're trying to help people understand the full societal benefit of this technology in communities where they live. So, you know, we're thinking about how this can save lives on roadways, both drivers and pedestrians and people that we're sharing the road with. We're also thinking about how this can help, you know, people who have accessibility needs, people who can't drive, who shouldn't be driving, who don't drive. And we're also thinking about how this can, you know, increase access, you know, for millions who, you know, maybe want to get out more than they currently do. And that's actually something where I was, someone was sharing with me some of RNIB's recent research, and they did find that a majority of people who are blind or partially sighted, you know, want to get out more than they currently do. And so I'm really hopeful that, you know, as we kind of help these skeptics better understand Waymo and what we're about, that, you know, they start thinking a little bit more about other people and how this technology can benefit their neighbors.
And that brings me very nicely, actually, onto the topic of accessibility. So What features are there for, well, for accessibility in general, but specifically for blind and partially sighted travellers as well? Because obviously if there's no person there, there's no physical driver to help you out, how does that work?
So our team is thinking about accessibility from the moment that you open the app to, you know, the moment that you're getting out of the vehicle and going to your final destination. So the app itself, the Waymo app, is accessible with screen readers, voiceover, and, you know, we will give you the information, you know, of how long it'll be until your car gets here. When the car is about a minute out, you'll get a little haptic cue, a little buzz on your phone to say like, hey, car's approaching. And then once the car reaches its, you know, pickup point, you have an opportunity to navigate within the app to say, find my vehicle or find my car. And what that does is gives you a couple options. One, you can get step-by-step walking directions that also have haptic cues, you know, like, hey, 300, you know, feet to your left, or and kind of helps guide you directly to the vehicle itself. You could also use some of our audio cues. So that could be a gentle melody or chime that the vehicle can play to kind of help someone if they're trying to figure out, like, is it to my left or right? And they, you know, prefer that mode. There's also a horn honking function in a busy city like London. I'm assuming people probably won't use that function as much. And then once you're in the vehicle,
yeah, it wouldn't make a difference.
once you're in the vehicle, the car greets you. So that's always helpful too. You know, you can, it acknowledges, like, it'll say like, hey, Callum, when you get into the vehicle. And then you can also use our accessibility app for a couple other features, such as in-car audio cues. That one's great because while you're in the vehicle, the PA system inside the car will actually give you additional cues to say, you know, waiting for the intersection to clear, or, you know, stopping for a pedestrian, or there's, you know, a cyclist outside your door, don't open the door. Additionally, it will also just give you cues on where you are in your journey. So while you're riding along, it'll say continuing along Main Street, or, you know, proceeding on this road. And I find that that's when I work with people who, you know, are in the disability community, that is one of the things that always comes up time and time again. They love that feature because there's so many times where maybe you're in a car with a stranger and you're like, oh, I feel bad. I want to know exactly where we are in the journey. I've been in the car for about 5 minutes. And that's something that our team has solved for.
I think, yeah, because one of the things that would, I guess, confuse me a little bit, especially at the start, is if the car stops, I know that part of me would be thinking, is it waiting for traffic, or has something gone wrong here? What's going on?
Exactly.
So does that give you information about kind of where you're traveling as well? You know, like what roads you're on, what direction you're heading, things like that.
Yep, it'll give you that information. It's selective. It's every few minutes usually, or if there's a, you know, a shift. When the car suddenly stops, I have these cues turned on. I am sighted, but I actually really appreciate this feature a lot myself, because it'll say stopping for object in the road, or stopping for a pedestrian, waiting for, you know, the junction or intersection to clear. And for me, that's really useful because I'm, you know, distracted. I'm talking to who's sitting next to me, or I'm, you know, listening to the music and singing along. And it's nice to know when the car does have, like, you know, when it's stopped or it's not moving, it gives me that cue. And I'm like, okay, great. Thanks, Waymo.
How does it work if, because I mentioned there about, has something gone wrong? If something actually does go wrong, like, I don't know, say it can't find where it needs to go, or let's just be honest about it, someone near the car is driving like an absolute idiot, which they do all the time in London. How does it handle that?
I once had a road safety expert in the vehicle, and when they were done with their ride, they came out and said, wow, there are defensive driving principles that are embedded in the code here. And so the vehicle is always, the Waymo driver, I should say, is always going to be thinking about what are the rules of the road here. And the Waymo driver is going to be driving defensively. It's going to go the speed limit. It's going to pay attention to everyone that it's sharing the road with. Basically, whenever it's driving, it's answering four key questions. You know, where am I? What's around me? What's everyone else doing? And then what do I do? And that is happening in split seconds. It's 4 questions, but it's happening very quickly, constantly when the vehicle's on the road. So when it comes to other drivers, you know, the Waymo driver is going to always err on the side of caution and safety. That's, you know, key to everything that we're doing here in this technology. For the in-car experience, you can access 24/7 rider support through an app in your phone or the in-car screen that's in both the front part of the cabin and the back seat cabin of the vehicle. And someone will be brought in from the PA system from one of our rider support teams, and they can help answer questions that someone might have. So, you know, hey, like my car seems to be stopped, you know, am I at my final destination? Any of those kinds of questions. I actually had someone once tell me that they decided to just stop because they saw a yard sale they wanted to stop at. And so there's also a pullover function. If someone's like, hey, you know what, this is actually where I want to get off. You can also use that function and Waymo will find a safe place to pull over.
Interesting. So, I mean, clearly a lot of thought has gone into it. What has feedback been like so far, you know, specifically from blind and partially sighted people? Has there been anything that has kind of come up that you maybe hadn't thought about, or, you know, something that's been implemented from feedback?
So I help lead our Waymo Accessibility Network, which is a forum of representatives from several different types of disability charities and organizations. And of course, we have many people who are representing, you know, the blind community. And I think the horn honking function was actually one of the first features that was really requested by blind people, which is, you know, hey, wayfinding, how do we find the vehicle? How do we know that it's our vehicle? And that one in particular, I know, has come up multiple times. And then, you know, we incorporated it, and then it's something that everyone uses. There's that really beautiful connection to universal design that our team embraces when we're thinking about these kinds of features. The other thing that I hear a lot from blind people, especially blind people who have guide dogs, is that there's no negotiation. So when you hail a Waymo,
yes,
the car is completely empty and you and your guide dog can get into the vehicle and go where you need to go. And you don't have to talk about, is it a pet or is it a guide dog? You don't have to, you know, negotiate. And it's honestly like, when I talk to people who have guide dogs, they tell me that this is just a peace of mind, like a weight just lifted when it's just you in the car.
That's my main argument. That's my number one argument for driverless cars, to be honest, or driverless taxis, at least. Hey, it's not going to refuse your guide dog.
My friend Ron has a guide dog, and he told me he lives in Phoenix, which is one of the cities in the U.S. where we first launched. And he says his guide dog, York, actually will seek out a Waymo now. He almost thinks the Waymos like are his cars. And I love that story.
Amazing. So this is all in the U.S. at the minute. What can you tell us about the London rollout?
Yeah, so we just announced that we're going to be coming to London next year. It's going to be our first European city. And in the coming months, we're going to lay the groundwork for our service. We're going to do that in collaboration with our fleet partner, Move. That's Move with 2 O's. And continue to engage with local and national leaders to secure the necessary permissions we need for our commercial ride hailing service. So, you know, we're still in the process of, you know, earning the public trust. That's where my team comes in. We get to work with organizations like Royal National Institute of Blind People and, you know, help the community understand what we're all about here at Waymo. And, you know, my team is still in listening mode, and we want this service to really be meaningful and useful for people when we decide to come to London. So that's what you can expect between now and when we launch.
Can you tell us anything about when we might be able to see that launch, or is there any particular parts of London that you're focusing on for now?
Yeah, we haven't shared that just yet. So nothing to share on this call in particular, but I will say that, you know, we do typically start in a pretty condensed area of a city, and then you see us start to map and grow and expand from there. When we first launched, for example, in Metro Phoenix in Arizona, we started with a really, really small, you know, 20 square mile service area, and now we're at 315 square miles, including an airport. So I will just say that, you know, we typically will come in a very condensed area and then grow from there.
So I guess at first there would be a bit of a limit on how far you could go with this. Like it would only be a certain area that's kind of mapped out and approved at first, and then that will kind of expand as you go.
Yep, you got it. It's a process, and it starts small and then it gets bigger.
And all these accessibility features that you mentioned, I guess they will all be there at launch?
Yes. So all of those features I talked about are within the Waymo app. And so they're the features that our riders can expect when they use the Waymo app. And we have an accessibility menu within the app as well that people will be able to toggle their preferences on and off. One feature that I didn't mention that I do think is something that the blind community does also appreciate is minimize walking time. So let's say, you know, you're going to a university or a large campus of some kind, you can toggle on the minimize walking distance and time by basically staying in the vehicle a little bit longer so that we can take you on a journey to get you potentially closer to your final drop-off location. And so, yeah, those are the kinds of features that are accessible through the app.
Fantastic. And if people want to learn more about this or stay up to date with the rollout, how can they keep in touch? How can they find out more?
Sure. Waymo.com/London. If you go there, there's a sign up for an email list and we will give you all of the details. You can also follow us on social media too. We regularly post details. But if you're specifically focused on London, go to Waymo.com/London.
Okay, there you go. Waymo.com/London. It's been a really interesting conversation. We'd love to have you back on as well. You know, please come back when this is a bit closer to launch or when it's been launched. Because for me, I mean, I'm fascinated by this. I can't wait to try this out. I'm not even in London, but I might have to make my way down there when this comes out. I'll make the trip just to try out a self-driving taxi. Yeah, why not?
Please do. I'm so excited. Thank you for speaking with me and for your great questions. And I can't wait to continue working with the blind community to make sure that we launch this and do it right.
Fantastic. Well, great to hear about this. Amanda Ventura from Waymo, thanks so much for joining us on Tech Talk.
Thank you.
Very soon, our site village Southeast will be taking place in London, and RNIB will be there. Joining me now to tell us more is John Carsley from our own Products and Advice Centre. John, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Nice to be here.
So what is Site Village and where will it be held?
The Site Village will be held in a new venue this year. It's the brand new venue and it is called the ILAC Conference Centre. And I have the address actually. It's 47 Lily Road, London, SW6 1UD. Now, doors open Tuesday, 18th of November from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Wednesday, the 19th of November, 9:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Now, Site Village is the UK's leading exhibition and attracts thousands of visitors eager to explore the latest technologies, products and support services. It offers a unique opportunity to discuss and engage with new innovations where you can see, touch and fully experience products and services. So you will also be able to meet some of our London-based eye care liaison officers, or ECLOs. We'll also be there to meet you and you can have conversations and find out what ECLOs do and how we support you.
Can you give us a little bit of a summary of what sort of products you will have at your stand?
Well, you know, it's worth mentioning. I'm really looking forward to the event. So if you do come along, please pop by and say hello. We also have some Christmas cards, calendars and diaries for 2026 for sale, so you can start your Christmas shopping early.
Now, people will obviously be able to see what you sell and talk to you guys from the shop. But if you would like to find out more about the RNIB shop, where can they go? How can they contact the shop?
They can contact our helpline on 0303 123 9999. And our web address is shop.rnib.org.uk.
Can you give us one more reminder as to location, dates and times for Site Village London?
Okay, not a problem. So the brand new venue is the ILEC Conference Centre and the address is 47 Lily Road, London, SW6 1UD. The doors open on Tuesday the 18th of November from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Wednesday, 19th of November, 9:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Fantastic. Well, we look forward to seeing you at Site Village. But for now, John Carsley from our Products and Advice Centre in London, thank you very much for joining us here on R&IB Connect Radio.
Over the last few episodes, we've been going over some of the new features and changes you can find in Apple's iOS 26. And to round off this little series, if you like, I want to show you how you can share your accessibility settings. Now, this comes in two forms. You can share them via iCloud, and that means that if you've got more than one Apple device, so if you've got an iPhone and an iPad, or an iPhone and a Mac, or you've got two iPhones for whatever reason, or you've got more than two, it doesn't have to be just two devices, as many devices as you've got, and they're all signed into the same Apple account, then you can sync them via iCloud. So I'm focusing on VoiceOver here because that's the main one that I use, but both of these apply to many other accessibility settings as well. If you change the voice on your iPhone, for example, when you go over to your iPad, the voice will have changed on there as well. If you create a new gesture in VoiceOver, so let's say you modify the rotor gesture, because that can be tricky for some people, you make that change on your iPad, when you go over to your phone, it will sync across there as well. So you can do it that way for your devices. And then the other thing you can do is temporarily share your settings to another device. And that doesn't have to be one of your devices, doesn't have to be signed into your account. It can be anyone's device. You can temporarily share your accessibility settings across, and then when you're done using that device, those settings will be removed and put back to how they were previously. Now, why would you want to do that? Well, iPads in particular are becoming more widely used as kind of payment terminals and kiosk-like devices. So sometimes if you're purchasing something, or you need to sign a form or fill out a form or sign for a delivery or something like that, it's not unusual nowadays for them to just hand you an iPad with whatever software they've got loaded on there, and then you just fill it in or sign it or whatever you need to do on the iPad, which on the one hand is great because the iPad is accessible, but it does present a bit of a challenge. You know, sometimes you might have to kind of explain to them, oh, okay, well, can you go into settings and turn VoiceOver on? And oh yeah, it is going to change the way you use the iPad for a second. So maybe just turn that on and pass it to me. And, you know, it gets a bit messy. So that helps you out there. If you can just share your settings over, do what you need to do, and then remove those settings, give it back to the user or the customer service person, whoever it might be, and they can just go back to using it as normal. The other time that this comes in useful, and if you're into your technology, you've probably found this as well, I am my family's tech support guy. Every time I go to see family, there's usually something, you know, a software update that they want help doing, an app's not working, or they've changed something, they don't know what they've changed, or they're running out of storage, all that sort of thing. And a lot of my family are on iOS, which is, again, it's helpful because I can just grab their phone, turn on VoiceOver, do what I need to do, and then, you know, that's fine. But in that instance, when you go to their VoiceOver, it's all like the default settings. And I'm not going to go through and spend ages customizing their phone just for me to do a 2-minute job. But you'd be surprised how much it throws you, you know, because I've tweaked my VoiceOver quite a lot. I've changed some of the gestures. I've got a voice that I like on there. I've got Braille screen input set to grade 2 and all that kind of stuff, and the UEB table. I've got everything set how I like it. And quite often with another person's phone, you can't really do that. You grab it and it's at the defaults. Or if you're helping out another blind person, you might not want to mess up their settings. So this allows you to share it to that user's phone for or iPad or whatever it might be for as long as you need, and then just take it off again. So I'm going to show you how this works. I will go into the accessibility settings.
Settings. Settings.
So I'm in the settings app, and then of course from here we want to look for accessibility.
Mobile service button, first battery, VP general, but accessibility button.
There it is, so double tap.
Accessibility heading.
Now the easiest way to get to this is to just do a four finger tap near the bottom of the screen, because the option that we want is the very last item on this screen. So I'll do that.
Share accessibility settings button.
So let's double tap on this and see what we've got.
Share accessibility settings button.
So we've got that same button again. So we'll explore this screen properly.
Temporarily transfer accessibility settings to another device. Your settings will be available while using a borrowed or public device, such as a friend's device or a kiosk, and will be removed when you are done using the other device.
Okay, so that's a little explanation there. Basically a much more succinct way that I just explained it. And if we carry on going down.
Sync to iCloud. Switch button off. When enabled, settings from this device will sync to other devices signed into your Apple account and will be available when sharing accessibility settings from those devices.
So there you go. That's the sync option. I don't have any other devices on my Apple account, so I've just got it turned off. But that's where you can enable it if you want to do that. And you saw the button above that to actually start sharing your accessibility settings to a borrowed or public device. So I've borrowed my wife's phone for this next bit, and I'm going to try sharing my accessibility settings over to her. So at the minute, her voiceover is pretty much at the defaults, I think. I may have tweaked a couple of things, but certainly not much. One of the things that is already there that I have set up is the accessibility shortcut. So a triple click of the side button will turn voiceover on. So let's do that now and have a listen to how her voiceover currently sounds.
Voiceover on. FaceTime. Double tap to open.
So that's the voice. It's quite slow. If I just have another flick around.
Calendar. Friday 07. Photos. Camera. Mail. No unready mails. Double tap to open.
The hints are turned on, which I don't have. So you're getting the double tap to open. If we have a quick look at what's in her rotor, because that's also different on mine.
Characters, words, speaking rate, 50%. Braille screen input.
Our Braille screen input is in there.
Stopping Braille screen input. Head containers, headings, actions, activate. Characters.
And that's all she's got on there. So a couple of things there that you should be able to tell the difference with. So I'm going to turn VoiceOver back off again. And
VoiceOver off.
We will do this as if it's a completely new device, no accessibility enabled, no shortcuts by default, and we'll go from there. So from my phone, I'm now going to go to the Share Accessibility Settings button on this screen.
Share Accessibility Settings button. Close button. Image. A white Share Accessibility Settings. Callum Stoneman. People. Heading. Jess button.
So it's detected that Jess is nearby. So I'm going to double tap on Jess.
Jess, waiting.
Now it says waiting. What it doesn't tell you initially is there's an instruction now of how to accept those settings on the other device. So if I flick off this and then back to Jess.
Jess, waiting. Hold and press with three fingers on the other device to accept button.
So it doesn't read that out straight away for some reason, but hold and press with three fingers on the other device to accept. So I'm going to try that now. Just going to tap three fingers on the screen and keep them there for a few seconds.
Settings, accessibility, back button.
Ah, okay. Now that's interesting. So it's transferred the settings. I didn't notice this during the testing. What it's actually done by the sounds of it is transferred my primary voiceover settings. So I have a specific voice added in my rotor for Tech Talk, which is this voice. It's slowed down a lot compared to how I usually have it. And it's, you know, it's kind of more familiar to how most people would be listening to it. This has transferred my primary settings. So if I ever flick around on Jess's phone.
FaceTime. Calendar. 27 November.
So obviously that's pretty fast. So I will slow that down slightly.
55%.
Hopefully that's okay. Because you can still change these, even though it's shared it across, you can make changes on this end as well. And that won't transfer back to me. It's just kind of taken my settings, and you can almost see it as using them as a starting point, really. So it's got your settings, but if you want to change it, you can. So if we have a flick around now.
FaceTime. Calendar. Friday 07 November.
So the hints aren't going, so it's not saying double tap to open.
Photos. Camera.
You can hear there it's just reading the options that are there. Again, if we have a look at the rotor, you'll see that that's changed.
Characters. Words. Speaking rate. Fifth containers. Navigation style. Flat.
Navigation style, we didn't have that there before.
Live recognition. Scenes. Off.
Live recognition, that's another thing that wasn't there.
Actions. Activate.
And then we're back to actions, because on my home screen, I have very few options in my rotor, mainly because I've added so many gestures and changed those. So that just gives you kind of a quick view of how the settings have changed over. So that is one thing to bear in mind, is that if you've got a couple of different voices set up, by the looks of it, it will only transfer your primary settings over, which shouldn't be too much of a big deal, really, but it is just something to keep in mind. When you're done using the device, there are a couple of ways you can kind of undo your settings. The first one is if the device locks. So if the other device locks, then that automatically removes your settings and puts the phone back to how it was. The other thing you can do is if you do a triple click of the side button, again, this is on the kind of friend's device, if you like, the shared device, triple click the side button.
Alert. Accessibility shortcuts.
So it brings up the accessibility shortcuts.
Selected. VoiceOver. Button.
VoiceOver's in there. I'm not sure if that's because that was there previously, but that's in there. And then if we flick to the right again.
Stop using shared accessibility settings. Button.
And there's the option. So if we double tap on that.
VoiceOver off.
It turned VoiceOver off and this phone is now back to normal. Something else that you might not have heard on there, by the way, because initially when VoiceOver turned on, it said it very fast, is that it also turned on the screen curtain, which is something that I have on all the time. Whereas normally when I turn VoiceOver on this, it doesn't put the screen curtain because I don't use it on someone else's phone, I feel like. They should at least be able to see what I'm up to. Hopefully, that just gives you a little bit of an overview on how you can share your accessibility settings and make someone else's device a little bit easier to use if you need to.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and it's time to talk bedtime stories. Yes, that great experience of being able to provide your child with a lovely bedtime story and making the experience accessible. Well, the Royal Society for Blind Children has come up with a unique solution for this experience. Joining me now to tell us a bit more about the Bedtime Donations app is Director of External Affairs at the Royal Society for Blind Children, Lily Rose. Lily, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Let's start with the basics, really. Bedtime Donations app, what exactly is it? What inspired it?
We are, in short, on a mission to try and create the world's largest free children's audiobook library. The magic in our of stories is really in our DNA. At RSBC, we were founded in 1838, I think, by a man named Thomas Lucas, and he wanted to teach blind children to read with Lucas print before that was then replaced by Braille. We're really passionate advocates at the Royal Society for Blind Children about the power of stories and how important they are in shaping a child's imagination and development. I know this all too well as a parent myself. Audiobooks can be an amazing way for blind and partially sighted children to access stories, but they can also be expensive and the range for children can be limited. When we did our own research at RSBC, one in three of the families we spoke to were really worried about their children missing out. So we had some conversations with our amazing creative partners at InOcean Berlin, who'd very cleverly realised that you have parents all over the world reading to their children at bedtime. So with hundreds of classic books already in the public domain and this tiny computer that most of us have in our pockets that seems to rule our lives these days, we've got an opportunity to really make some magic and create new audiobooks for free. So we launched bedtime donations within hours. We've been bowled away with the response, really. Within hours, it was the number one app on the UK App Store books chart. And we've now got 3,500 people registered on the app, over 300 stories live and available for children to enjoy. And we've run out of books, which is a lovely problem to have. And now we're looking for, to keep this alive and take it forward.
I mean, the reception for this app has been truly fantastic. And it, you know, I've seen plenty of news stories about this. And it's such a unique way of actually providing that bedtime reading experience. So how does the app exactly work?
Yeah, absolutely. So the app's got two main sections. You can donate a story or you can listen to a story. In donate a story, your parents, your carers can simply choose a book from one of the 15 different categories on the app. You've got classics, animals, adventure, mystery, and you can record yourself reading it to your child. You can read an initial section in one night, for example, and then return back to record another part later on. And it sits in your personal library. And then when it's complete, you just click upload and it uploads it. It's very clever. It's a bit like karaoke, that section. So the and then AI checks the recording and its content. It takes out any background noise and then it goes for checking and then publishing. So that's then live. And then listen to a story. That's very straightforward. You go through, you look at the different categories, you select a story and you can listen to it.
Can you choose whether the stories you record are available to all users or whether they're just for your personal use?
Not quite. So if you are recording a story and publishing it, it's out there. It's your donation of a story. But you can save stories that you like and you kind of want to go back to. And that's been a really lovely way for, say, a lady who works with us. She's a neonatal nurse and she can do 12-hour shifts at a hospital. And so she's not always able to do stories at bedtime for her little girls. So this is a lovely way of her voice still being able to be around, even if she's working long hours.
Who can record stories? Can it be just literally anybody, parents or carers or anyone?
Yeah, absolutely anyone. Anyone who can download an app and anyone who can download the app can donate their voice, essentially. We want to try and create this experience that's open to everyone.
So you don't have to kind of be a professional voice actor or a professional reader.
No, but we've been really lucky to have celebrities involved in the campaign as well. So, and Dr. Hilary Jones, for example, has written some poems and recorded them himself. We've got Dave Steele, the blind poet. We've got Ralph Little reading The Three Little Pigs and John Richardson and reading. We've got lots of kind of professionals reading it. But actually, the real heart of this is the fact that anyone can record a story.
Now, when it comes to bedtime reading to your child, you know, a lot of parents love the experience of being able to read their children a bedtime story, you know, being able to do it themselves and kind of get the same experience as everyone else is getting. So how does the Bedtime Donations app complement that experience?
We're definitely not looking to replace the experience of and the intimacy of a bedtime story. I think this is just about increasing access to stories. And it can also be a way. So my little girl, she's 4 years old. She comes home from school sometimes. And actually just listening to a story can be a really lovely way for her to kind of regulate and calm down from the busy stress of a school day. So that in those experiences as well, it's just providing another way for children to access stories. But we certainly wouldn't want to remove people reading to their kids at night.
When it comes to, you know, the work that has been done on this app, how was the kind of lived experience of blind and partially sighted parents and children kept in mind?
The whole way through, we started off by doing some research, and we're very keen to understand from families where that gap is. The app itself was developed by a fantastic kind of creative team in Berlin who worked with us to understand kind of the key principles that we wanted to embed, you know, as we've kind of tested it and gone through and tried to work out, you know, what stories do you want to have next? I mean, the challenge comes back to copyright. We can't always get copyright, if copyright is prohibitive, you know, the app only contains books that are cleared for this project. But if we have a steer from parents and children around what they want to hear, then that helps us carve out where we go next.
So this app has not been around for long, really. It's been around for
about
a month. But, you know, have you had any particular feedback from children, from families about the difference this app, you know, has made to them so far? Any particular success stories that stand out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on the first day, it was so popular that the app crashed. So we got lots of feedback very quickly going, ah, help. Outside of that, no, we've had some really lovely feedback. We've had feedback actually not just from kind of children and parents, but siblings and grandparents around the fact that it's just opening up access to them and that they're able to record their story and how nice it is for their children to hear a familiar voice. But also what's really touching as well, we've had lovely feedback from authors who've donated their stories to the app and actually heard someone else reading it who they don't know, who's read it so beautifully. That's been really touching as well. So, yeah, it's had some really positive feedback and it's completely surpassed what we were expecting.
Now, if people would like to either, you know, record their own bedtime story or, in fact, use it to play bedtime stories to their children, how can people get involved?
You can download the Bedtime Donations app from RSBC. It's available on Apple App Store and Google Play. If you'd like to potentially donate a story of your own, if you're a budding author and interested in speaking to us, then just do reach out. We'd love to hear from you.
And if people would like to find out more about the great work you do in general at the RSBC, how can they do that?
Oh yes, please, always. We are on all of the various social media platforms and you can visit us online at rsbc.org.uk.
Fantastic. Well, we look forward to hearing more about the great success this app achieves and even people's feedback on it as well. Thank you very much, Lily Rose, Director of External Affairs at the Royal Society for Blind Children, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
And that's it from us this week. Thank you so much, as always, for joining us. If you want to get in contact, if you've got any tips or comments or anything you want to share with us, let us know, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. As we always say, it's your programme, so please get involved. We'll be back with you, same time next week, but from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.